Welcome to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. This is a show sandwiched between two doctor's appointments today.
Indeed it is. It will be brief and it will be to the point and it might be a little bit fiery. And we'll see how much of it actually makes it into the final edit.
Yeah, that's true. So Mike had a doctor's appointment and I'll be heading off to a doctor's appointment in a little while. And boy, are we getting old? Is this what happens? Like when old friends like... You know, all they talk about are their ailments.
Time marches on.
It does.
This is the oldest I've ever been.
Yeah, it really has. Because you're older this week than you were last week on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So any sort of ailments you can talk about? Are they...
Wow, no. But I really have. There's just something... I know I'm 36 years old, you know. I don't know if it's just that the number has like triggered something in my brain, but it's just like everything's wrong.
Right.
Everything's wrong now. It's like that Brian Regan routine, you know, where the doctors are just like, yeah, you know, this is messed up and well, that's how it's going to be.
I'm going to go get my eyes checked in a little while and I'm just getting off of pneumonia. I guess
just getting off of pneumonia. Is that how they call it? I'm off the pneumonia wagon.
What do you say? I'm just recovering from? I'm recovering from.
I've never had pneumonia, so I don't know. But it's good because, you know, some people take a lot longer to bounce back from that.
Yeah, I mean, whatever antibiotic they gave me, my God, this thing is fantastic. So last Wednesday, I just started feeling funky. You know, I just started feeling achy. And you know when in, like, the early stages, like, your loved ones don't want to hear it when you just start getting just generally achy? You know, they're just kind of like, uh-huh. They don't really pay it much, like, lip service. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, no, just something's wrong, you know. And mm-hmm. and they're still like, because we got to deal with kids and stuff, and that's priority one, you know. I'm just like, I just need to take a nap or something. Oh yeah, you need to take a nap. We got two kids running around here. You want to take a nap? Is that what you want to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I hate to say I told you so, but I did advise you against that
about an extra child.
I did. Did I not? Let's be honest here. I advised you against it.
Well, she's just a little lump right now. She's not really doing it. So, and there's not really much I can do, right? Because she doesn't take a bottle, so she just doesn't.
No, I think there's something you could have done to prevent that.
Well, but you know, hindsight's 20/20. Mm-hmm. There's no armchair quarterback in this one. Mm-hmm. So, I just started feeling achy, you know, and oh man, Thursday, was I hit with a ton of bricks. I suddenly had a massive headache. And, like, no cough, no sore throat, nothing. Just, you know, I don't know what it was, just this massive fever. Cold chills, just totally achy. Like, everything was hurting, even my jaw. To the point where I felt like I had, like, a root canal, you know, I needed, like, a root canal or something.
I don't think I even really understand what a root canal is. Like, I understand that people talk about it and that it's supposed to be an awful procedure, but I don't think I even really understand what that is.
Yeah, I think what you do is you drill down into the tooth because it's become so, you know, the cavity has gotten past just the enamel portion and it's now into the root structure of the tooth.
Mm.
And so they need to like go in and drill out all the decayed roots and like mm-hmm. fill it. And they, you know, they hope that they can keep the tooth. Most, you know, sometimes they don't. They have to pull the tooth and put in like a fake tooth. Mm. It's incredibly painful, like a root, mm-hmm. you know, root canal is like a general statement for pain, you know. And so I just felt like, my God, maybe I've got like a massive cavity or something because my jaw's killing me and it's causing I don't know. And then, my neck started hurting, then my back started, and then everything just started hurting.
And the cavity went down into your neck.
Right, the cavity spread like a cancer. So I was like, well, something's going on here, you know, something more. And boy, then Friday came, and I was like, you know, I got to work on the weekends. I got to get up at like 3 a.m. to go to. I'm like, and I never call in sick, and I don't call in sick. And I just was like, there's no way. I mean, right. I can't even leave the couch. I'm in just dire straits here. Mm-hmm. You know, like wife's putting like cold rags on my head, and that was like helping keep the fever down a little bit. But I had like 104 degree fever at one point.
I was hoping you were going to say Mark Knopfler was putting the rags on you, but.
And so I ended up going into like this emergency clinic mm-hmm. and she, you know, she said, well, there's only three reasons an adult would get a fever. One of which would be strep throat, which I didn't have, and she checked. One of which would be a flu, which she thought it probably was. And third reason would be pneumonia. And she's like, look, God, let's hope that's not the case. Since, yeah, I don't want that to be the case. So she gives me like Tamiflu. And
that's like camouflage, right?
Mm-hmm. So that other people can't see me. And she's worried, though, because my like lower back is killing me. And that's a major sign of pneumonia for some reason, which I found odd. But I had always heard that. Like, oh, does your lower back hurt? People would ask. Oh, that might be pneumonia, you know. And so I got home. I took this medicine, and it just made me feel worse. She said, you know, by tomorrow, if you don't feel better on this medicine, this antiviral for the flu, then you'll know you'll have, you know, you better go get your chest x-ray to see if your lungs have fluid in them, in which case you would have pneumonia. So I didn't feel any better. And the next day I felt like I just wanted to be shot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next day we go to this another emergency clinic for a chest x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, there's like fluid in the lungs, and I've got a respiratory infection, or I've got a lung infection, pneumonia is what they call it.
I see.
They give you an antibiotic, and you know, you're supposed to just continue all these fluids. And that night was the worst. I mean, because I, you know, you can't eat anything. I was like hardly have no appetite for anything. But to take the, in order to take the medicine, you have to eat something. So there I'm at the emergency clinic, just like throwing up nonstop. Anytime the doctor walked out of the room, I like found, you know, nearest spot I could throw up. And there's nothing coming up. You know, there's nothing left in me.
Mm-hmm.
So they ended up giving me a shot in my butt. One of these anti-nausea shots. Have you ever had one of these things?
I don't think so.
Oh,
I think I'd remember a shot in my butt.
Because she's like, okay, I need to give you this shot so you can actually take the medicine so you don't keep throwing it up. You know, you got to... we have to take this antibiotic, otherwise you're never going to get better. So she's like, I like walk over. She's like, okay, come on, you know, over here for the shot. And she said, okay, I need you to bend over. We're going to give it to you in your tushy. And she said, I said, what? So I had to bend over, get a shot in my butt, and took this medicine. Just felt awful. And then overnight was the worst. Like violent shaking and cold sweats and just horror. Like I was a meth addict coming off of. You know, like in, what do you call it? In remittal, in, what's the word?
Withdrawal?
Withdrawal, yeah. Like I was at a clinic or something in withdrawal. And boy, then the next day felt, you know, about 10% better.
Mm-hmm.
This antibiotic seemed to be kicking in. And 2 days later, I feel like a new man. But I still feel weak, like just taking like a slightly long walk, you know, just to get a little bit of exercise and fresh air. It just left me a little weak. So I could see how if you were elderly, like pneumonia could kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're a child, pneumonia could kill you. But as fit a young man as I am in my mid-30s, like left me barely dazed for a week.
I see. Now, getting a shot in the butt like that is a usual Friday night for Clayton, but do you feel like during your visit to the hospital that any of your organic parts were replaced with bionic parts, a la the $6 million man? Like, for example, when you jump over brick walls or trees now, does it make that mechanized sound effect noise?
I haven't noticed that, but when I pee, I do hear a canary singing.
Oh.
So they may have added a whistle to my penis.
That's usually the first thing. This one's got pneumonia, right? Get the whistle.
Add a whistle to his. That actually would be a cool song. You know, it'd be, I wonder that. In
That's
the,
a They Might Be Giants song. I don't know if you know that.
Add a whistle to his. I wonder. I mean, that would probably be a terrible superpower. Like if you.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We because if you think it almost reminds me of, you know, of what's his name from New Mutants?
Cypher, the most useless of the mutants.
Yeah, Cypher, who right. Our listeners aren't familiar, was a mutant in the Marvel universe, and what he could do is he could speak any language or communicate in any language.
Right.
Read in any language too.
Right. He could definitely understand any language, but I don't know that he could speak. I don't know. that character's so forgettable, if not for the fact that it seems like roughly every 30 episodes of The Grizz we bring him up to bash him.
Right.
Like, I don't think anyone would ever remember Cypher.
Then, of course, in the Fall of the Mutants, he was killed off.
Right. Doug Ramsey was his real name. Do you remember that?
Doug Ramsey, really?
Yeah, I remember that. Because, you know, they resurrected him then, and he, like, melded with Warlock.
So he went, Doug Ramsey, of course, then went on to offer financial advice for people on syndicated radio.
That's right, on his syndicated radio show called Hell's Kitchen.
Right, his his business, his debt snowball program.
In a related note, you know, Chef Gordon Ramsay, who is a real person, not a fictional character, he has canary incontinence.
And also, I was just listening to the Police song "Canary in a Coal Mine." Just a few minutes ago before the start of the show.
I was going to say, well, I don't know if using that as a colloquialism for your phallus, a coal mine, really doesn't seem appropriate.
Sometimes you got to go deep. Hey, speaking of terrible superpowers, my wife brought up, she said, I wonder if you could trace back, like, I wonder if you had a superpower where you could trace back where you got this thing. Because I didn't, like, leave the house. And pneumonia, you catch. It's a bacterial infection. You don't, right. You know, pneumonia I always used as a joke for things, like, that would happen if you did something. Like, it was always right.
Don't go in that coal mine. You're going to catch pneumonia.
Exactly. Don't leave that door open. It's 30 degrees out. You'll catch pneumonia. But you can't catch pneumonia from a cold or an open door. Right, you can't catch pneumonia from just being cold.
That's a real thing. Like people, you're right. People don't understand how you catch pneumonia, and you get it the same way you get AIDS from toilet seats.
This is why education is so important, kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you catch it. It's a bacterial infection, so you catch it from someone or something, right? And I had just been in the city, and I just was...
Bacteria there?
There could be bacteria on the subway, on the train. I mean, this is why you, Mike Quackenbush, never leave the house.
For the most part, right.
Now, I am in the middle of... And I wonder if you've ever had... Well, let me first finish this thought, because my wife brought up the idea of the superpowers. And if I could trace back, like if I could just know when I caught the virus, like would that be an interesting superpower? And you'd love to know, right? You'd love to picture it going backwards in time, like that Denzel Washington movie where he touches, you know, they keep touching people's hands and the spirit keeps being handed off to the next person. And you could like see it happening, or that Star Trek episode where they beam down to the planet and he puts his hand on that virus and everyone ends up catching it. You know, and the rest of the on the Enterprise, and they trace it back to the away team.
To patient zero.
Right. You know, who caught it, right? The Andromeda strain. Like, where did it begin? Like, it'd be interesting to know. But right. it'd be a terrible superpower, right? It'd be just like Cypher.
Like, that's your power is knowing where it came from?
Right. Like, knowing where a virus came from.
Yeah, not very useful.
Right. Like, if you're going to go into battle, you probably don't want that guy.
Right, yeah, he stays behind at the Xavier's mansion. You know, like, you don't bring him out on the battlefield. Like Forge.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they'd all come back all beat up, their costumes are all shredded, and Forge has been in the lab the whole time. You don't need Forge out on the battlefield.
Although it would be interesting, I'm reading this David McCullough book about the building of the Panama Canal right now. So at the early 1900s, you know, everyone died of malaria. Mm-hmm. And so that would, like, you know, historically, maybe this power would be fantastic, right? He gets called into the Panama Canal Zone. Like, hey, you know, hey, virus man, you know, everyone's dying. We don't know what's causing this. Figure it out. And he just touches the shoulder of one of the poor saps on the Panama Canal dig. He's like, I know, it's from a mosquito. And I mean, just think about the lives he'd save.
That man had intercourse with a chimpanzee.
That man was recently in a wrestling ring.
That's where ringworm comes from.
That's right.
Everybody I know that gets ringworm, where'd you get it? In the ring.
What is ringworm? It comes from like a dirty mat?
Yeah, that's the most common thing, like a mat that hasn't been cleaned properly. And it's not entirely unlike athlete's foot, but happening somewhere else. It's a little more severe than that.
And what's Matt's last name so we can call him out?
Classic. Matt Classic is the name of... they do need to clean them I think it's far more common on amateur wrestling mats that don't get mopped down correctly, because there's like no absorbency. You know, those rubber mats, it all just stays right there on the surface. So, you know, after like a wrestling meet, for example, where there might be 12 or 16 matches, all that perspiration and everything else and the stuff that you pick up on the bottom of your wrestling sneakers and walk out onto the mat and all that just lingers on top of the mats. Whereas, like, a professional wrestling canvas does have a little bit of absorbency, you know? Like, if for some reason you spilled a bottle of water in the middle of a wrestling ring, given enough time, the canvas will absorb some of that. But I have, over the years, I've wrestled in incredibly skeevy rings where there's, you see blood droplets, you know, just all manner of gross things that aren't cleaned. And those are the kind of rings where you really do think to yourself, I think I'm going to get something while I'm here. Luckily for me, I am the most dressed wrestler this side of La Parca. You know, my hands are exposed and little parts of my arms and, of course, my head and face. But the rest of me is really covered. So a lot of times, you know, if I'll come across a group of guys that said, hey, you know, that place we wrestled, whatever, like in Indiana a couple weeks ago, a bunch of us got ringworm from the mat. Did you get it? And I won't because I'm so covered up.
There's a lesson in that for kids. Mm-hmm. Always cover up before you enter a professional wrestling ring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would imagine the guys that are just in the little, like the little, what do you call them?
A Speedo.
Like a Speedo, yeah.
Right, sure.
Those guys probably get it bad, right?
Yeah, I'll tell you, this is a really strange, very like dated wrestling story from the 1970s by Johnny Kincaid, a wrestler who was known as Johnny Kincaid, who I think just very, very recently passed away, maybe in the spring. Anyway, he, like a lot of British wrestlers, just wrestled in the little Speedos, the trunks, the wrestling trunks, and his boots. Mm-hmm. And he talked about – now, you can imagine how this would play today, that after the matches, because for that exact reason, right, that you're rolling around on your back trying to keep your shoulders up off the mat – that to have dirt or other things on your back is really common. And so the wrestlers, in England anyway, after the matches, in the shower, would all wash each other's backs to get, you know, just to make sure that they were really clean. And I'm reading this story in his autobiography, and I'm like, what a really odd practice that is. The reason he told the story is because there was a British wrestler who liked to play pranks on other guys. And his gimmick was that he would stand behind you pretending that he was washing your back, but he'd pee on you. And I was so alarmed when I read this story. I was like, wow, what a great prank that is. And then I burned the book.
Don't you wish you were wrestling in the golden age? Man, that really would be the golden age.
I was talking to well done. Mm-hmm. Well played, Mr. Morris. I was talking to a couple friends of mine who are really up on that sort of stuff, that what's called the world of sport era of British wrestling, the 70s into the early 80s until the cancellation of British wrestling from television. And we were talking about this because a few of my friends and I, we have been trying to coax the legendary and one of my idols, Johnny Saint, to do one more match. He has said that he doesn't want to wrestle again. And
I got a chance to see him the last time I saw you guys wrestle, right?
He was there. In Reading. He was there. And he is a marvel. He is a marvel to watch in the ring. And he's told me privately, publicly he's never made an announcement that he just doesn't think he's going to wrestle anymore. And I feel like his motive for that is that he did once retire very publicly, but then came back. And I think he feels like for him to say that again, I don't know, that there'd be something duplicitous about it perhaps or whatever. And So some friends of mine and I have been kind of working on, like, what do you think would be the right match that Saint would say, yes, I'll come to it? And we've been talking about that, and we were sort of reminiscing about, wouldn't it have been great, like, to have really been in the thick of it with these guys? Because Saint now is in his 70s. A lot of those guys from his era are either retired or, sadly, they've passed away. And we'll never get the chance to lock up with them, to go toe-to-toe with them. And we were kind of, you know, lamenting this fact. Like, wouldn't that have been great? Like, if we had been born that much earlier and we could have wrestled with guys like that in the 70s or 80s. And I just said, I have a story I got to tell you about Johnny Kincaid in the shower. And that's gonna be the end of this discussion.
That's a pretty weak superhero power, too. Like, I think, yeah, like, maybe like a – you have a – you're terrible at practical jokes. Like, that's your superhero power.
But that's not even a power. That's a detriment. You know what I mean? That's, that's an unpower. Like, I didn't get the power of great pranks.
I wonder what would be, you know, if you got the short end, if you got like the short straw out of the hand, you know, the hand pickings for superpowers, what would it be? You know, you got, you can pull out the long, you could get, yeah, I got flight, I can fly. You know, I can, I have, I got another straw here. I got like adamantium wrapped around my bones, and I've, you know, the power to heal myself rapidly, so I can basically never die. I've got super scent. It's not bad. Maybe it's like half a straw.
What do you mean, like Stinkor? Stinkor from Masters of the Universe?
Right. Or, you know, even like Wolverine, right? He has like incredible scent, right? He can smell things from really far away.
His sense of smell, you mean? I thought you just meant that he had a really strong scent about him, like Stinkor.
Oh, no, not like Stinkor. Yeah, that would be kind of worthless.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's kind of a worthless one. There is a character. Someone can tell us this. I don't believe it was from a Marvel or DC book. I believe it was from an independent book. It might have even been from one of the incarnation of Mystery Men, which you might recall was made into a, I thought, a very funny superhero movie in the late 90s with Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo, that there was a character, it was like a team of people that had useless powers. And the one girl's power was that she could make multicolored bubbles.
It's kind of like Dazzler.
Right. I think it was meant to be like a spoof of Dazzler, but that was all she could do. She could make multicolored bubbles.
Yeah, like what would be some other power? Like, I'd be the guy that would get the power. I'd be like, I'd draw the like the low straw, like the guy that his pants never get wrinkled, which actually would be a pretty decent power,
right? You could do worse than that.
Because then you could have like a whole wardrobe of khakis and never have to worry about ironing them. Like, I'm the guy who always keeps a pleat.
There was a guy. He appeared in one issue of Doctor Strange. I won't even say it was issue 77, the original run of Doctor Strange. And his power was that he always had exact change.
Get out of here.
Mm-hmm. He was part of like an order of monks, and like that was his power, that he had exact change at all times.
Wow, that's lame. Especially given the fact that we've all moved to like plastic. He just becomes irrelevant.
Well, you got to figure. I mean, this was from like the early 80s. That was like from 1982 or 3, I want to guess, that issue.
Yeah.
It came in one of those three packs. It was an Indiana Jones comic. And you open that and you're like, oh, God. You know, because you bought it because there was a Spider-Man comic on the outside.
Right.
And you're like, oh, what's under here? Oh, Indiana Jones 20. And then underneath it was like Doctor Strange 77. But for what it's worth, that's a really good issue of Doctor Strange. And whoever that artist was, he was excellent.
Let's pause here and thank our first show sponsor this week. How about our good friends over at Drobo, makers of a whole new line of Drobos. And they've created the greatest backup storage solution that anyone could think of across all of your computers and all of your devices. Mike understands the Drobo so well because you're running a Drobo FS right now. And explain
exactly
to folks,
right.
I mean, how easy was this thing to set up? What does it do? And how easy is it for others to get up and running with this thing?
It is fairly easy, and I think you can take my word on that because of the two people that host the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, I am the less tech-savvy of the two of us. And I would say from like the minute I took it out of the box to the time it was actually like running and doing its job, it was maybe 15 minutes it took me to set everything up. So if you're a little more tech-savvy, I've heard of people that have it up and running within 5 minutes. My learning curve, more like 15.
Yeah.
But it's a series of redundant drives. All your information is backed up, not just in one place, but in multiple places. Like my Drobo FS has 4 1-terabyte drives loaded in it. So not only would my computer's hard drive have to fail, but all 4 of the drives in the Drobo would all have to fail simultaneously, which it's far more likely that I'm going to hit the Powerball, Clayton.
Right.
which, speaking of, I'm going out to get Powerball tickets. But the information is stored redundantly, so you're always protected. And it's really easy. I mean, even I can't foul this thing up. I look right across the dashboard. I see how much space I've got. Because if I was starting to run out of space, I could just pop out one of the drives and pop a fresh one in.
Yeah, that's how great it is. Because currently, you know, you might have a Drobo that has, like what you said, you had 5 drives with a terabyte each on them.
Well, I have four in the Drobo plus my, you know, the hard drive in my PC.
So you could expand it, you know, up to like 16 terabytes. I mean, you could go all the way on up on a single volume. As larger drives become available, you can expand and expand and expand. It doesn't matter. So it's sort of endless amount of data as it becomes, you know, these video files and photography files become so big. So Drobo connects right to your computer, your home network. And what's great about the Drobo FS is that it does. It connects to your home network. So anyone on your home network, you can make it open so that, you know, your wife's laptop, your son's computer can all connect to the Drobo, share files, share video files, and save things redundantly. So you never have to worry about drive failure. It's makes any storage solution for any family and any business need. So they have a whole range of different Drobos. We're just telling you today about the Drobo FS. We're going to tell you next week about some different ones. You got to check them out. Go to Drobo.com and click on the How It Works page. And there's a nice little video there, Callie Lewis, our friend. You can click on that. You can watch her explain how you put the drives in the bays, how they work, and the different drives and the different Drobos available. Just plug in, peace of mind. You never have to worry about your data. Sharing your files has never been so easy. Check out the Drobo FS over at Drobo.com. We thank them for their support of this show.
Information Clayton Morris has just given you is true.
True and to the point.
I would like to point out that, especially when we discuss our great show sponsors, without whom this program is not even possible, right? The reason we can give this to you free every week is because of them. We try to be really accurate. The rest of the program, all bets are off.
Right. We're very specific when we're talking about our sponsors, so we really couldn't.
To the delight of our sponsors.
Right. We couldn't be we try to be 100% factual with that, so we hope that right. We hope that you'll go over and check them out. Just spend a minute or two there, Drobo.com. That'll help us out a lot.
Now, speaking of facts, I'm going to talk about something that is factual. And I am going to enlist the aid of the Egghead Army, as well as that of my co-host Clayton Morris here, in a campaign that I am beginning now. And the campaign I am beginning right now involves our hometown newspaper, the Reading Eagle. You are familiar with the Reading Eagle, are you not?
Indeed. It's the hometown paper of record.
Indeed it is. It is, as they claim on their website, they have been serving the Berks County community for over 140 years, even the surrounding areas.
I mean, if I wanted to learn about, like, the, you know, upcoming Berks County Jazz Fest, right? Like, I'd see, like, a paper the week before talking about all the events coming up for the Berks County Jazz Fest and, you know, all the different venues and musicians who are going to be in town. That's the paper, you know, you'd turn to learn that information, right?
You would if you're someone who reads a newspaper. And while I am not, there are people, believe it or not, that still do.
Hmm.
Now, yeah, that's that's
who are these people?
I always imagine in those moments, you know, like those early seasons of Seinfeld that where they'd use the stand-up bumpers at the beginning and the end of every episode.
Right.
How many seasons did that last? Just one or two, and then they did away with it?
No, it was like four or maybe even five.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't realize it went that long.
Yeah.
I always imagine, because it was always supposed to be that same club, you know.
Right, like, right, right.
The extras that were playing the audience never changed. Like, Jerry's telling the jokes. His shirt would change, but he's been telling jokes to these people for 5 years.
And it would get embarrassing because at some points the material was not funny at all, and they actually had to add in laugh track for it.
Oh, I believe that.
At which point they were like, maybe this time would be better served in the writing of the show. Let's get rid of this.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, dated Seinfeld reference for you. On Monday, which is, I don't know when you're hearing this, but Monday of this week, August the 13th, after the fact, the Reading Eagle spent quite a bit of ink and space on a review of a charitable event that was staged by the company that I helped found, Chikara. This was to raise money for a worthy cause in need called Baseball Town Charities, which is a Reading-centric charity. They are headquartered in Reading. They were founded in Reading. They are staffed by denizens of Berks County. This helps Baseball Town Charities helps underprivileged kids to be able to experience or otherwise play baseball. For example, they build baseball diamonds, you know, places where, you know, they couldn't afford otherwise to have that, and they help organize leagues and they get kids involved. That's kind of what they do. You know, like, baseball to the masses is their mission. And I'm not trying to tell you that this is like the most noble pursuit of all time, but I am telling you I feel that it's a worthy cause, enough so that along with me, 35 other performers and dozens of members of the Chikara staff organized and performed an event specifically for the benefit of Baseball Town Charities this past Sunday, August the 12th, at First Energy Stadium, which is controlled by the Reading Phillies, our local hometown minor league ball league. Team, whatever they are. I'm not big on the sports. Had the Reading Eagle spent even a fraction of the ink that they spent insulting us on Monday promoting this event, they could have created greater awareness of the event. And to be fair, who this would have benefited most of all are the children that reap the benefits of Baseball Town Charities. Greater awareness would have triggered a greater turnout. You could only have been admitted to the event by making a donation to Baseball Town Charities. All the money collected for admission to this event went to Baseball Town Charities, 100% of it. Oh, let me amend that. That is less the 5% that the state took as part of their taxation. Nevertheless, it is my feeling that this very pompous claim on the part of the Reading Eagle, who not only were insulting to all the performers that took time out of their schedule and everything else to do this for charity in their piece of August 13, not only were they in that way insulting and writing to the detriment of a small business that is struggling in a difficult economy, but so too they were negligent. They failed to support a Reading-centric nonprofit organization that needed help. And how sad it is that a very small company the size of Chikara had to be the ones to raise $700 for them, while the Reading Eagle, a giant company in Reading, did nothing. I have taken my grievances to both the editorship and the executives at the Reading Eagle, and they are unmoved. However, it has dawned on me that because of the podcasting network, as well as the social network that I have at my disposal, whether it is here through the Grizzly Productions podcast that I host, or from my work in other avenues, or simply the personal following I've amassed in places like Twitter, that I do reach a large audience. In fact, more people follow me on Twitter than follow the entire Reading Eagle news organization. And therefore, what I'm asking you to do, my friend Clayton Morris, and all of you, my friends, the Egghead Army, and anyone else that will listen, I'm going to embark on a campaign in light of their negligence, to get the Reading Eagle to match the $700 donation that we at Chikara made to Baseball Town Charities, and we are not centered in Berks County. Our organization is not headquartered in Reading. But the Reading Eagle, which boasts that they serve the greater Berks County community and surrounding areas, they are. And perhaps this giant organization, since they were negligent in their duties and responsibilities to the community to promote this event for a worthy cause, will now answer the call as I and anyone else who can help me will tweet about at Reading Eagle, as one word, and urge them to match Chikara's $700 donation to the Reading-centric Baseball Town Charities.
Well, I think you could just employ the entire Egghead Army out there, plus any Chikara fans who are listening, I'm sure. Hey, whenever we've asked, you know, before to blast out Twitter, we've gotten hundreds and hundreds of responses, so there you go. Take it on.
The gauntlet has been thrown down. Will you come to my aid, Egghead Army? Yes.
Now, I hadn't read the article. I didn't realize it was derogatory. And so my mom had sent me actually a text message of the front page of the paper that had like a big picture of you wrestling and like a wider shot of the, you know, of the ring and wrestling. I thought, oh, that, you know, that's nice. They took some photos of the event and whatever. But you're saying they were derogatory.
That is certainly the feeling of everyone at Chikara. As the headline reads, we are erroneously identified as Chikara Pro Wrestling, which has not, nor will it ever be the name of our organization. It reads, Chikara Pro Wrestling brings slapstick to stadium.
Hmm.
And
Yeah, and then so just so people are clear, Reading is R-E-A-D-I-N-G.
That's right. Reading Eagle is their Twitter account, and we will use the power of social media. Since they couldn't be bothered to do anything good for the community they claimed to serve beforehand, now after the fact, at our urging, we'll see if we can't manage to get them to do something good.
Indeed. Giddy up. See what happens.
I'll try my best.
It's the least they could do, right?
Absolutely it is. You would think so. Especially given that I believe they have a financial partnership with the Reading Phillies. They are to promote what the Reading Phillies do, and they're paid for that consideration. They have failed in more ways than one. And I'm certainly not going to be the first person to take them to task for this, but I'm going to be the person right now. So let's talk about Songza.
Oh, yeah. So Songza, a few weeks ago, I think I was at a Starbucks with my wife, and I had just heard about it. My friend Sarah Lane on the Twit Network was talking about it on iPad Today. And, you know, you know your basic music apps, right? Everyone's got Pandora. That's sort of the old standard, right? You sign up for free. You can listen. You can create any channel you want. You can create a Sting channel, and it just plays. Like, every fourth or fifth song, you'll get a Sting song, and every other song will be sort of similar to Sting, you know? You can create, like, an 80s channel on Pandora. You can create, you know, it's great, you know? And I think you get, like, what, 40 hours? Do you know this number off the top of your head? You get for free, like, per month, you get, like, 40 hours of listening music for free.
I don't think I have ever used Pandora.
Ooh, wow. So, you know, that... I don't know. You might enjoy it, but maybe songs are sort of one steps past it right now, you know? But you can sort of – you can be very specific in the type of artist you select. So you can create like a Mike Nesmith station, and then every like fourth or fifth song, you'll get a Nez song. It might be a live song. It might be something you haven't heard before, you know? And then you'll get like some Monkey songs thrown in there. You'll get some other sort of country rock that you might never have heard of. And actually, it's great. That's how I've discovered like a lot of different – you know, good music is through Pandora, and it's free, you know.
Right. You're talking about Pandora here, not songs.
Right. And so I'm just trying to give people a little backstory because, you know, and the Pandora app on the iPad is great, you know. And you can – and there's Pandora also, of course, on the Sonos player as well. I think it was their first partner. Mm-hmm. So – and then, you know, you pay for like a premium account. If you're like a store or like a, you know, a little boutique and you want to have Pandora playing in your store all day, so you burn up that 40 hours like within a week, you know, you pay like $8.99 a month or something, and then you get, you know, no ads, and then you can just play nonstop music for a month, you know, for however much you need it. Mm-hmm. So then a couple of other music services came along, like Ardio, which is like a subscription you pay every month, you know, to get like whatever, you know. Sort of like Spotify. Then you got your Spotify, you know, you got these other services you pay every month. And then Songza comes along. So how would you describe Songza? I was really tempted by it, and I downloaded it, and I loved it on my iPad.
Songza, it's almost like a series of playlists, I guess I want to say. I might not be using their exact term, but where things are kind of organized down to the craziest subgenre of music. And there are some that are organized by artist. You know, there's one called like Michael Jackson Dance Party, where 50% of the songs are Michael Jackson, and then other similar artists or relevant artists, things like that. But there's an enormous variety. There's a whole playlist of 60s French pop hits. If you want to listen to stuff that's just from the Tropicalismo movement in Brazil, you can listen to just the hits of that era. There's an incredible amount of like drill down capability. Like you could go into like, for example, 80s, and you're going to find 50 subdivisions thereof. You can listen to a playlist that's nothing but new wave. You can listen to a playlist that's nothing but hair metal. You can listen to just the one hit wonders. You can listen to just like Manchester area bands influenced by the Smiths. Like, it's ridiculous. Now, I really like it for some of the reasons that you like Pandora. I've heard of one of the playlists I was listening to, this artist came up like three times who I'd never heard of before, called Eliza Doolittle. And I was surprised how much I liked her stuff.
Huh.
I'd never even heard of her before. But the minute you get bored, there are so many other playlists to turn on in the background You know what I mean? Like, there's just infinite variety. The only downside I have found is that if you do listen to one station for maybe more than 2 hours straight, the songs start to repeat.
Oh, really?
Now, they don't always repeat in the same order.
Right.
In fact, sometimes on a rare occasion, I've even heard like the same song come up, you know, like almost back to back. Like that song, a different song, and then that same song again. Like, I don't know what the system is like or their algorithms for that kind of thing. But generally speaking, I found it to be very, very entertaining.
Now, you may have spent more time with it than I have. Now, the reason I bring this up, or the reason you brought this up, because now it's available not only on iPad, but it's available on your Sonos as well. So you download,
by listen to it. Yeah, you put that app or whatever into your Sonos, and you just kind of sync the two up, which takes all of about a minute, and then you can stream it right out of your Sonos.
Yeah. So now you can control it in your Sonos player, which has all those different partnerships. And do you know – because I know like in Pandora, what's great about it is they claim you know that Pandora gets smarter and learns your tastes because – You give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down to songs that you like or don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like are listening to a crappy song and just pops up randomly, you're like, oh, I don't want to hear this. On Pandora, you thumbs down it and you'll never hear it again.
Interesting.
And it also then learns to not play similar sounding crap, right?
I see. That's very interesting. I don't know if that exists in songs or not, because you can skip ahead, but songs will limit you. You can only skip ahead 3 songs every hour.
Huh. 3 songs every hour. You know, right. What's cool with songs is that, and again, should say it's free. And I think there is a premium. I think there's a premium plan you can pay for.
Yes. Every once and again, you're right about that. You can definitely pay for a premium one.
And I'm not sure what that offers you. I think it just offers you like no ads or something. And maybe you get more variety. Maybe they add some extra level of variety, although I don't know that that's the case. Maybe there's like, maybe more of an extensive playlist or something. I don't know. But what's cool is when you launch it for the first time, like if you're just not in the mood to drill down as much as Mike just did to like – find, you know, not only 80s, but then like 80s bands influenced by the Smiths, you know, which is pretty granular, you know. And then you can set that station to a favorite, so you don't have to dig that deeply next time, right? I think you can just add it so that it's there in your favorites.
If that's the case, I haven't figured that out yet.
Because, like, I found a Beatlemania one, and I just clicked that. I think I saved it on the iPad. I just clicked it to favorites, and then it's, you know, it's there, so that I don't have to go digging for it next time. And what's cool, though, is if you just log in, you're not in the mood to go drill down like that. They've got – I think I don't know if you saw that. They've got like 6 sort of presets that are set up. So when at whatever time of day you're logging in, it has like a little picture like I'm just waking up. I'm starting my workout. I'm at the desk and I don't want lyrics or distraction. And it's got like 6 different kind of little things like that. Or I need a pick-me-up, you know, or I'm sitting by the pool today. And you just pick one of those. You're like, you know what? I am sitting at my desk today, and I don't want a distraction. You know, you hit that button, and you might just get some nice music that doesn't have a lot of lyrics, and it's not going to be a lot of interference for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about it. I did that the first time I was playing with it, and I hit something, and I just got like some John Mayer music and some James Taylor, and it was pretty cool. Threw in some Norah Jones. It was a really good mix of music. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I think kind of what won me over was on the first day I was playing with it, they have some of these lists. Like you can listen to Rolling Stones' list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. Like they've compiled them into a playlist for you.
Oh, cool.
And one of them was called like the Pitchfork 500. And I didn't know what that was. And I clicked on it and the first song was Birdhouse in Your Soul. and I thought, you've won me over already. I also this just happened to me in the last day or two as I was changing stations. They have an under 80s. They have a Blue Eyed Soul station, and the first song to come up was "Don't Shed a Tear" by Paul Carrack, which is one of my all time favorite songs. So, generally speaking, I've found it to be very much to my liking, and I do like to have something on in the background while I work. So.
It's cool because you can actually play it right from the web also. So if you're just sitting there and you don't have, you know, an iPad set up, or you don't even have a, you know, Sonos set up or anything like that, you just go to songza.com. And I just went there. It says, it's Tuesday afternoon. What's the perfect music for Tuesday afternoon? You know, an energy boost? work or study with lyrics. Summertime, it shows a little guy sitting in like an inner tube. Legendary record collectors and a weekday dance party. Click on whatever you want. Tom Petty's record collection. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So like Tom Petty's record collection. In 2005, rock legend Tom Petty began hosting Tom Petty's Buried Treasure, an XM radio show featuring favorite tracks from his personal record collection. It hit play. And that's his like favorite tracks, favorite stuff curated from that XM radio show days.
Right. And they do have a few artists who've done that for them. Tori Amos, for example, has put together her own personal playlist just for Songza. So there's a lot to discover there. At first, I admit, I found it a little bit daunting. Like, there was almost too much to look at. But I've really kind of grown to enjoy it, and the variety is terrific.
Yeah, and it's available on iPhone, Android, Kindle Fire, it looks like no BlackBerry, of course, but who's using that? So, yeah, you can pretty much pick it up anywhere. Check it out. Cool. Songza, songza.com.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Well, before we go, we have a few more minutes. I want to thank our show sponsor, our good friends at Cobra.
Yeah.
Makers of the Cobra tag system. Now, if you've not seen what this is, and you know, look, it's getting back to school time soon, right? People are buying these back to school items. And what do? You go off to college. How many times do you lose like your dorm room keys? I know all the time when I was heading off to college, I got one of those new like sort of wallet packs at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was always worried, like, because I put my student ID in there, and my key to my room was like on that thing, you know. Yeah, and I wasn't driving while I was in college, so I didn't have to worry about that. But my God, what if you lost that thing, right? You lose your keys, you're screwed. Well, that's where the Cobra tag system comes in. I mean, they make the Cobra iRadar, they make a whole ton of great gadgets, but the Cobra tag system will keep you from ever losing your keys again. And it'll also work in reverse. It'll keep you from ever losing your smartphone, which is going to be invaluable to you on campus when you head back to school. If you've got a son or daughter that's heading off, this might be the perfect graduation or I'm sorry, back to school gift for them. What it does is it pairs with your smartphone. So can't find your keys, you launch the app on your smartphone, press it, boom, beeps, locates it, you're able to find your keys using GPS technology, and it does an incredible job of locating it for you, making sure you're always, you know, in connection with it. And it works in reverse too. The little tag on the keychain, if you lose your smartphone, will beep and actually lets you find your smartphone by emitting a sound, and you can track that down as well. If you can't find it in the couch cushions, or maybe it's left in your friend's dorm room or something like that, it's just that simple. The folks at Cobra do an incredible job on a whole range of different products. This is just a little one we wanted to tell you about today, the Cobra tag, which I absolutely love. I think it's an ingenious idea. They solve everyday problems is what they do. So go to cobra.com. and check them out. They've got a whole lineup of products. You can always find them on Amazon as well. If you want to get something quickly, go to Amazon.com, do a search for Cobra Electronics, and you can get those orders in quickly before the kids head back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know, kids even like with a little kid's book bag, you know, like put a Cobra tag on the back of the book bag. Forget keys. Just like snap it on there. You don't have to worry about it. And you know your kids are safe walking home from school. You've always got like a little bit of a locator on them, you know. Mm-hmm. Smart way to kind of keep track of your kids that way, too.
Yep. You can also inject that little microchip thing right into their buttocks.
Right. Get a butt shot.
That works as well.
Hey, something – I wanted to ask you this. You know when you're homesick, boy, do you watch a lot – you know, I don't know about you, but I watch a lot of crap. You know?
Right. I don't get sick.
Right. You never do. You can't afford to.
Boy, is that the truth.
I mean, when you're down and out, you're like, oh, I can't do any work. There's nothing to do. So I'm just sitting there on the couch watching random crap after random crap. But, I watched some fun stuff, right? I caught up on some of Jack Osborne's show, Haunted Highway, on the Sci-Fi Channel. Bought a season pass of that on iTunes, and that's highly entertaining. So I caught up on that. But I was looking for this Animal Planet show, Finding Bigfoot, which I think they just wrapped up their second season, and that's highly entertaining. So I wanted to – I've never seen an episode of that, and everyone keeps telling me to watch that. So I bought a season pass of that for season one of that on iTunes and started watching that. Really, really well done. But while I was doing a little search on Hulu Plus to see if it was available that I could stream it for free, I was doing some digging and I typed in Bigfoot. And I came across some like Saturday morning stuff from the 1970s. From
Bigfoot and Wild Boy?
Well, no, not Bigfoot and Wild Boy. An episode of The Secrets of ISIS.
Oh, right on.
Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're right. It's one of those Filmation properties from the Super 7 era.
Yeah, and it was like 1975. It ran for one season, The Secrets of ISIS. It's available on Hulu. And I mean, this is the kind of stuff that our audience watches. You know, this is the kind of Egghead Army kind of stuff we're talking about here. This was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen. I couldn't believe this made it into television. And what's interesting, so I did some digging. I wanted to, like, you know, learn a lot more about this ISIS character.
Well, she's a Filmation creation, I believe, you know. You know, she was also live action. She was played by Joanna Cameron and then spun off. You know, she appeared in their live action Shazam series. And
right.
She even teamed up with him. But was also in her own series, you know. And Joanna Cameron also, incidentally, played a brief love interest for the Nicholas Hammond Peter Parker on the CBS Amazing Spider-Man, I think, in the two-parter called The Chinese Web.
Yeah. So you'll recognize her from that's where I've recognized her immediately, was from that from the 70s Spider-Man show.
Right. She plays like the nosy reporter type, which, right. You know, every superhero show in the 70s was full of them.
But this character, the idea is that she had gone on an expedition and uncovered this ancient Egyptian amulet, which was owned by ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And ISIS apparently had superpowers or something. And she's like a brainiac schoolteacher now as she uncovered this thing. Mm-hmm. And when she wants to, she turns into ISIS. But it's not entirely clear like what her superpowers are. But, like, all the kids in the school seem to know that ISIS is always kind of around.
Right.
So they're out, like, on a hiking expedition doing, like, just having a picnic one afternoon. And in the episode Bigfoot, like, they're like, all right, kids, it's time to go. And they're like, hey, where's Timmy and Maya? And they're like, we don't know. And then, like, suddenly they come running down the hill screaming. And they're like, what's wrong? I don't know. We saw some big hairy creature up the hill. We think it was Bigfoot. And so ISIS, or the teacher, sort of steps off to the side, and they're like, oh, we better go investigate. And she's like, okay, I'll wait here. I'll be right here. And then they go off, the rest of the kids and the other male teacher, and then she transforms into ISIS and just, like, walks up there and, like, looks around and then walks away and like, smirks the whole time. And it was the first time that anyone sort of, like, looked off camera.
Mm-hmm.
Like breaking the conventional wall of television and looking at the camera. So she would like look at the audience and wink, like she kind of knew like she was in on the game.
Mm.
It was just the most bizarre thing. Then it ended up not being Bigfoot up there, but it ended up being like a hillbilly.
Mm.
But he was like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, I make that mistake a lot myself.
I mean, there was a rescue scene though where he falls down the hill, this hillbilly, and she like commands from the. She's like flying over. ISIS is like flying over like Wonder Woman,
right? She commands the wind is one of her powers,
right? And she commands this rope that had snapped and sent this guy down the hill to repair itself and wrap around him, and then fly up and then wrap around her while she's flying by, and she like drags him up slowly. So you can tell like it's like a crane off camera, like lifting this guy up slowly. But meanwhile, the shot of her in the sky is her rocketing at like 1,000 miles an hour. Like clouds are ripping by, her hair is, you know, flying like crazy. By all accounts, he should have been picked up and carried like 3,000 miles.
Right.
But he's moving ever so slowly, you know. And then she lands, and like everyone knows who ISIS is. Like she lands, and like even like the hillbillies, like, are you ISIS?
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone is supposed to know who this ISIS character is. But I proceeded to watch the whole episode of this.
Right, I'm sure you did. Yeah, ISIS. I do know ISIS really well. You know, they did then bring her into DC continuity back during the 52 countdown era. They brought her in as like a supporting player while they were giving a big push to Black Adam, who's, you know, like Captain Marvel's eternal rival. They brought ISIS into the regular DC continuity. Incidentally, you know, they're doing the whole Marvel Now thing, which is like not unlike the New 52. It's basically like they're pushing the reset button. And just in the last day or two, it's been released that they are restarting with all new X-Men number one from the original five X-Men. And I was really happy to read that because that's my favorite team. Mm. But I do think that's going to be a flop too, incidentally, Marvel now. But good luck with that, Marvel. On a nostalgic note here, something worthy of note, you know, a couple of things. One, like, for example, you know, this past week marked the 50th birthday of Spider-Man, right? Spider-Man turned 50 yesterday. But something else that a landmark anniversary of sorts, which is just coming around right now, started to come together last week and then very, very rapidly expanded ever so quickly as the three surviving monkeys, Michael Nesmith, Mickey Dolenz, and Peter Tork, are reuniting this fall for a very short 12-city tour of the United States. And they're going to be performing. It's kind of being done as a tribute to the memory of Davy Jones, who, you know, passed away back in February.
Right.
They've even gone so far as to say they're going to attempt to sing the songs that Davy's best known for, like Daydream Believer. But this is really a landmark thing. This is the first time that Nesmith has toured with the Monkees in the United States since 1969. It's very, very exciting. It is bittersweet in that I really do think it took the death of Davy Jones for this to happen. Because, you know, without him, it really isn't the complete... It's not the quartet, you know? But you'll recall a couple episodes ago here on The Grizz, we had talked about the fact that it was somewhat mystifying that Nesmith had announced these three European concert dates out of the blue with no U.S. dates. And I'd even spoken to some people on his side of the equation, and they were obviously, for certain reasons, being very tight-lipped about whether or not anything else was forthcoming, because I get the feeling at the time this deal for the Short Monkees reunion tour was not done. But I think that the logic stands. We had talked about the idea that he was doing this off the radar to kind of tune himself up before doing something bigger, much like the Monkees themselves did when they played their first real live concert in Hawaii.
Right.
They were far enough from anywhere that if it didn't go well, nobody would hear. And I think that's exactly what these UK dates from Nez are going to be. They're him warming up right before he goes on the road with Mickey and Peter as the Monkees. However, since that's been announced, the tour dates have been announced, the tickets are on sale in all 12 of the cities right now for the Monkees reunion tour, Nesmith gave an interview where he said when this is done, he's going to embark on a full solo tour of his and that he's going everywhere in 2013.
Wow.
And sadly, he has also hinted, maybe even more strongly than that, he's basically said, this is the beginning of the end for me. Which I thought was kind of a sad remark from him. But, you know, he's feeling his age, right. And that's the truth. If, you know, the last live concert that he performed was on March 18th, 1995 in Virginia. And I've spent most of the last how many years between then and now thinking that was the last time he's ever going to play publicly. And I think the fact that there's even another string of these is amazing. And I'm very much looking forward to going out and having the chance to see him because I had almost consigned myself to the idea that I would probably never get the chance to see him. And that's a person I would very much like to see live. Yeah. And I would, if there was even a brief chance to meet him, I would really, really relish that opportunity.
Well, you and I are going to head to see him in Philadelphia, or head to see the Monkees in Philadelphia at the end of November. So,
yes.
Any other eggheads in the area want to come join us for that date? We'd love to. Maybe we could do a little meetup ahead of time in Philadelphia. It'd be kind of cool.
Right on. Right on.
We could do that. Be kind of cool. Kind of fun. Well,
I think so. I think a good time will be had by all.
Yeah. Well, I got to run to my doctor's appointment now. It's been a good show. Had fun.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, usually these are quite tedious.
Yeah.
So I'll be back later this week with a daddy on board. Over the weekend, I'll probably crank out a trending show with Clayton's wife, Natalie, and then Clayton and I will resume our usual activities back here next week with another edition of The Grizz.
So before we leave you today, I wanted to play this little song for you.
Oh.
It's the full opening credits from the 70s TV series, The Secrets of Isis. Here it is. Enjoy, from 1975. We'll see you next week, eggheads.
O my queen, said the royal sorcerer to Hatshepsut, with this amulet, you and your descendants are endowed by the goddess Isis, with the powers of the animals and the elements. You will soar as the falcon soars, run with the speed of gazelles, and command the elements of sky and earth. 3,000 years later, a young science teacher dug up this lost treasure and found she was heir to the secrets of Isis. And so, unknown to even her closest friends, Rick Mason and Cindy Lee, she became a dual person, Andrea Thomas, teacher.
Almighty Isis.
And Isis, dedicated foe of evil, defender of the weak, champion of truth and justice.